Stephanie Cumming, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
From Santa Anita Park, Arcadia, California, the great race place. A very good Thursday race fan. Sirius 219, XM 201. Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebeck.com. The Hall of Fame finalist tour continues because everyone can say good morning, not just to Hammer, of course. Hammer's up for Hall of Famer in racing executive category. Why don't they have one of those? But John Sadler joins us. Good morning.
Good morning.
Always great to see you. And Hammer, you made it. You made it into the gate. You were almost a gate scratch.
No, I was stalled back there.
You?
I had a few roadblocks back there, answering a few questions on the way up. And I was actually looking for John too. And I look up, and he's sitting here.
I had already corralled him.
That's a good move. But another crisp morning. A little something different this morning, though. Today, if we look to the north, horses.
Oh, that's a good point. Good point. We already had a loose one on the training track just a little bit ago. Yesterday, a wonderful conversation with John Sheriffs. This morning, here's John Sadler. And, you know, John, I was on hand for the Eclipse Awards and so enjoyed, you know, the trips up to the stage that your team got to enjoy, and you had a division of assets for the acknowledgments. I didn't bother you for a postscript. We talked so much about Flightline, but you know, here's your chance really to kind of summarize some thoughts. I'm sure all the dust is settled, and you know, he's not in that stall when you come in the morning. So I'm sure there's some thoughts still that are resonating.
Well, we had two great trips. You know, the World Championships in London was sensational.
That's right.
You know, the English really appreciate horse racing so much. So the interest and the comments I saw when I was in London were tremendous. And then, you know, going right back to Palm Beach, not a bad couple of weeks. So we had some really great trips, and it was really fun and exciting. And, you know, I was thinking, you know, it was the first time we've ever kind of all flown out. It's like going to the big races, but you already knew you won.
That's a good point.
It was the best of both kind of trips, you know. The anticipation of going and having fun, and almost, I'm not saying we knew the results, but we did know the results. I mean, there wasn't a lot of gray area there. So we had a really good trip, and just a lot of fun.
Adjusting to, you know, the operation post Flightline, because you and I spoke repeatedly all the way through Breeders' Cup about the pressure and the tension on a day-to-day basis, and that includes, you know, Juan Leyva and the team at the barn unwrapping his legs every morning, and I mean, what, you know, the lump in the throat on a daily basis getting him to assignments and then through the biggest opportunity.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was a walk that I wanted to be really close to him. You know, I didn't miss a moment of it because I felt like I was walking through something that you may never walk through again. So I was up close to him, next to him. I mean, I could tell you what time of day he lay down in the morning, what time, how long he'd lay down in the stall. You know, we knew everything. And what I'm having fun now, even though for a little bit from afar, you know, following how well he's bred, you know. His first mare was named in foal day before yesterday. The fun little stories that he's going through right now. He's so smart, and he's such a fast learner. You know, after about 3 days going down to the breeding shed, he didn't want to go home. So I'll just stay down here.
Why are you walking me back?
Why are you walking me back? So, you know, there's a lot of great stuff going on. So we're in a good place and looking forward to this year. I got a lot of exciting young horses coming up this year. Should have some major announcements on some new shooters here pretty quick. So looking good.
Well, outstanding. And as we said, you know, constantly through the campaign, you know, you had to play the cards as they were dealt in terms of having him. You know, everybody says, you know, where are you going next? We're going next where the horse allows us to go. And, you know, given, you know, a mercurial talent like that, that is, you know, a lot of times these types are too fast for their own good, as they say. Who knows how many flight lines never got to even get out there for those four or five races.
Yeah, and, you know, we would have liked to have run a little more, no doubt. I mean, but that wasn't the way it went. So we did what was in front of us. And you know, it became very clear early on that, you know, this horse never needed a prep. You know, he didn't need practice. You know, he didn't need to run in the San Diego to get ready for the TVG Pacific Classic. So we rolled him out there on the best days. We won the best races for the older horses in America with the Met Mile, the Pacific Classic, and the Breeders' Cup Classic. And he was just fine. So it really, you know, we wanted to get a perfect game, and we did.
You know, I always say, we're talking the other day about matching up horses, trainers, and owners together. I don't think it could have come up with a perfect combination, the ownership group, you know, led by Costa and you and the horse. Coming along, you know, after you've been training for a long time and, you know, kind of paid your dues, but had a lot of nice horses all the way through, and now all of a sudden, boom, you get a flight line. I think you, just knowing you and knowing how you handled it, you had that calm about you. Nobody was going to tell you what to do. Nobody's going to force you to run. The media wasn't going to tell you what to do. Your experience of having those good horses at towards, you know, how much confidence did that give you when you made your game plan for flight line?
Well, it did a lot because, you know, having had a lot of background, like you're saying, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. David and Gordo was very instrumental in kind of keeping a weekly email to all the principals, you know, what we were going to do. And everybody on the ownership side was great. They said, you do what you think's right. I had everybody encouraging me to do the right thing. And when you have that kind of encouragement, it's great, but it's also a bit of a burden because if there's a mistake or a screw up, it's on me because I didn't have any pressure on the other side.
Right.
So, you know, it was a great run and topic here. I mean, to have that much brilliance and that much speed going into a stallion, I mean, you can't really expect more, you know, from a young stallion.
And we talked earlier this morning about, oh, flight line, oh, that's, John's going to, you know, slow down a little bit. He's just getting kick-started, right?
Well, that, you know, and that's a great, that's actually a great segue to Tuesday's announcement, finalist for the Hall of Fame again this year, and a very, really a fascinating group of active horsemen.
Yeah.
When you think about you and Christophe Clément, Graham Motion, and John Sheriffs.
And Doug.
And Doug, that's right. And Doug, he's supposed to. Doug has to do phone, by the way, today. He's got some appointment off campus, so he wants phone today. So that's our other Hall of Fame nominee finalist.
Yeah, it's a really good group. There's no doubt about it. It's a strong field, and you know, I hope everybody gets in because you know they're all deserving. You know, there's, you know, everybody in that group is deserving, and you know, I think that'd be tremendous. It's just a really good group of horsemen. It signals the strength of the industry, and it's very exciting.
You know, I did, on a local matter, I noticed we had John up yesterday talking about Doug and talking about you, John. It's Santa Anita Handicap Week, and guess what? You've all won the Santa Anita Handicap. I mean, it kind of shows what type of race that is and what type of goals that you guys set for yourselves. To win the big races here in California.
It absolutely is. I mean, it was the most iconic race in the Santa Anita circuit for many, many years. And even though the money is not, you know, Arab, Saudi Arabia, or Dubai money, it's still an important race. You got a good horse shipping in, I think, in proxy. Looks like a strong field. So I think it should have some good racing.
I agree, too. You know, one thing I think that goes along with your upsurgence, is that a word? Upsurgence? it is now, in the last, you know, 10, 15 years, is Costa Hironas. He came in, you know, he came in from the grandstand. He was a fan, and he shows up, and he hooks up with you, which I, like, once again, you can't make that stuff happen.
The great pairing.
And you've bought horses.
Like wine.
You bought horses together that seem to have blossomed. But he's that kind of a soothing guy in the corner that just kind of says, here, John, do your thing, and let's have some fun.
Absolutely. I mean, he's so encouraging of me. You know, he takes defeats well. You know, he's very even-tempered. And it's just, you know, it's great. He's my fallback position. If I bomb out as a horse trainer, I'll be working for him at the farm. He's that good, you know. So he's just outstanding. And he has a management style. Not everybody can have this kind of style. If you're in charge of the horses, that's your department. You're in charge of that. And I'm not in charge of grapes or anything in that, you know, that's out of my field of expertise. But he's been sensational. And, you know, that's not an easy thing to do. You know, it's easy to become the kind of the micromanaging type owner. And, you know, why'd you ride this jock? Because he lost three races yesterday or something like that. He's the kind of guy that lets you do what you think is right. And we go from one to the next and move forward.
With all the challenges that Southern, not just Southern California, but California racing has faced, it is notable that you've got an owner like Costa Hironas. Gary Barber, I equate with Costa, given that Gary's, you know, will compete at any level. If he sees a horse that's worth claiming for 40, he'll do it. And Costa the same way. I mean, with all their success at the highest level, they enjoy just Monday through Sunday racing. It doesn't have to be Saturday. It doesn't have to be a Saturday horse. They love the game. And when we think about what the family has done, got to mention that, Stephanie has gotten very involved in aftercare and has taken a leadership role with TAA and is
absolutely
fully
involved.
Know,
and she's really involved in, she's on the TOC and the aftercare.
Yep.
She's getting very involved in these women's summit and racing, which is, I think, something long overdue. So she's doing a lot of great things in the industry, and she's bright and energetic, and so it's really a lot of fun. We're really enjoying it, and, you know, we're looking forward to what's coming up.
Well, yeah, she showed up at the, she was an observer at the Graded Stakes Committee meeting.
Yeah, just because she wanted to learn.
Just because she wanted to learn, and, you know, it's like a bright face in the room. You can't leave out Brother Pete, though.
No. Nope. Pete's great.
Pete's part of the whole process, and I keep threatening on one of those drives I make up and down. I'm always like, I got to call you and stop by and, you know, get the tour. And he's anytime. So I'm going to do that up in Delano.
He'll show you around, no doubt. He was with us in Palm Beach, and he had a pretty great time. And his daughter is the manager for the University of Arizona's women's basketball team. So he's going to a lot of college basketball this year.
Good. Well, that couldn't be a better place to do it either.
No, it's a good place.
I love it. You know, talking about what's coming up, we should mention, and I didn't realize it until I went to get the entries for you, and when I was looking as part of the conversation about the Hall of Fame, last year was your best year in earnings.
Okay.
Did you realize that?
I didn't realize it. You know, we've had some other years comparable, but if that was the high one, it was the high one. But, I mean, it was certainly, you know, Flight Line was so special. It was just great.
The action this weekend, let's at least spend a second on Haywood's Beach, and then I want to talk about some industry issues and get some horsemanship input. But Haywood's Beach, who... You know, this feels like a big opportunity.
Yeah, he was a consistent horse last year. We used him in those marathon races. He won two of them on our circuit. He was second on the undercard there at Breeders' Cup at a mile and a half. And so this year we're trying to shorten him up a little bit. So he was doing so well. We ran him early on, you know, against Country Grammar. Mile and a quarter on dirt if you look at, you know, he won a nice allowance race at that level. So, you know, the distance isn't an issue for him. So we'll see if he can step it up a little bit more. A hard trying horse.
He's also, it does feel like he, that he's tactical. And Ramon Vasquez, that seems to get along with him well.
Yeah, he's ridden him really well, you know, every single time. He's with a favorite when he was going a mile and a half. He won both times. The Breeders' Cup race was a little bit odd. Some horse we really didn't think could win was in the lead, and we couldn't catch him. But his form is very, very straightforward. So, you know, it's a big field because it looks like there's a lot of horses you could like in there. But, I mean, as far as, like, does he check the box for distance? Absolutely. Mile and a quarter should be right up his alley. So, hopefully we get a good trip on Saturday.
I got to also mention, I said how Costa is willing to reach in and claim a horse, not necessarily for 40 or 50, because here's the $150,000 claim that was boosted out from under Michael Lund Peterson and Willow Grace Farm. The Bolt Doro out of the Scat Daddy mare, that was a $300,000 baby, and $150,000 claim, makes a second start, last seen at Del Mar in the debut, slowish race, that won't matter now. Sam Malone, in terms of you Cheers fans, you can't beat that. And what's interesting is it wasn't Nick Alexander that named this
horse. I was thinking the exact same thing, even though everybody knows your name.
Yeah. Well, I like, you know, Bolt Doro. I mean, I think he got off to a good start last year. There's no doubt about that. They look like they could be dual surface runners, run on dirt and turf. This horse out of a Scat Daddy mare. So when I claim a young horse going short, I'm usually looking to stretch him out, you know, and I think this horse has a pedigree to run around two turns. We had a few things. We had weight on him a little bit since Del Mar, but he's done that now. He looks good. So we're anxious on getting him started this week.
Unbelievable. That's in the opener on Saturday, noon post here, so 3 o'clock Eastern. Sam Malone's the 3, and Abel Cedillo, who's actually had a challenging meet, Cedillo.
Yeah, he has. He kind of slipped back a little bit, but there's more than one that slipped back a little bit with the emergence of, you know, the really strong guys that came in. I mean, as great as Dettori is, nobody thought it would go this well for him. And he's done great, and, you know, he's earned everybody's respect.
Kaz Kimura showing up.
Yeah, and the leading rider at Woodbine. Johnny V's here. You know, Pratt's here for the winner. So it was a really good group this winter.
In going through the card last night and this morning, your guy, Tiago Piera, has had a fabulous meet.
Yeah.
Terrific.
Yeah, he's had a good meet. I mean, just, you know, it just shows you, you know, what how it goes sometimes. You know, somebody is your turn or somebody else's turn, but he's had a really good meet riding very well.
John Sadler with us, and part of the conversation has to turn toward the difficulty here. It looks like the rough weather is behind us. Training today, just galloping, right? I don't think there's any breezing going on. But, John, how do you, same question we asked yesterday of John Sheriffs, you know, how do you adjust to this? We've talked in the past about your show horse experience and the kind of formal horsemanship training that you came up under, all different areas of equine sport. What some solutions to these challenges?
Well, I mean, it's been, you know, an outlier. We don't have this much weather ever, but we have it this year. I'm hoping that I can encourage maybe the TOC and the racetracks to revisit some of this that was written into law on sealed tracks and when it can open and we can't be open. I think that has to be re-looked at. We're going into this weekend less than ideal conditions with the track being closed several days. So I'm hoping, you know, that we can have some discussions on what we could do going forward. You know, the weather does look behind us, so I'm glad about that. And I'm, you know, when you've been kind of sitting on your tail for 5-6 days, you're kind of today, we're glad to be going back to work.
Yeah, John brings up a good point. It's hard to put on paper about weather. I mean, about the racetrack. We talked about it the other morning. We used to decide, we come out here, kind of look at the track, just go over the situation, and then make a decision that day.
Yeah.
It's hard to say, well, it says on paper it something happened 2 days ago that we can't do today on the racetrack. Yeah. So, you know, maybe the times were, at that point, had to be done. But I agree with John. It's time to revisit some of that stuff and kind of open the gates a little bit.
Yeah, and, make, you know, we have, you know, when you get good people in here working, you know, people that you can make a call, you know, you got to let them, you got to let them do it. You can't tie their hands with regulation on everything, you know. So, like I said, I hope there'll be some discussion surrounding that.
And I heard you having discussion with Gary Studi and some of the guys at Clocker's Corner earlier this morning as well. You talked about the HISA advisory meeting, and you made the salient point, John, that some of their rules are less stringent than some of the ones you're living under here. And what, you know, I think I'm circling back to you with this question, but your impressions about where we are as an industry when it comes to, you know, the authorities' authority.
Well, I mean, you know, when you look at the positive, I think it's going to be great that the whole country's under the same set of rules, you know, for clarification, what, you know, what's positive in one state. And, you know, I think that's very positive. You know, I think there'll be, you know, a lot of some kinks going down the road. But, I mean, I think, you know, we're all going to have to adjust. We are adjusting. California will have less of an adjustment because some of our rules are more, a little more strict than HISA. You know, it'll be interesting to see how California adapts. I think technically by the law that they have to, you know, HISA comes first. So I think there's some states' rights and versus federal lawyer type stuff that has to be worked out, but I'm sure it will get worked out.
And you're comfortable with the way things have progressed, and you know, how deep into the weeds have you gotten with these coming medication rules and the like?
Well, like I said, the medication rules we've already been racing under, so that's not a big adjustment for us.
All right.
So hopefully everybody can get together on the same page, and you know, I got to be an optimist. You know, I got to think that this is a great sport and people love it, and hopefully we can get all our things worked out.
Well, and you've got no intention of relaxing or you know, finding something to your time.
Don't you think I'd want to train some of those flight line babies?
What about the Accelerate babies?
Yeah, they're going to improve as they get older.
One thing I notice when I get off the plane at Keeneland, which I have a few times, I always send John and Costa, like they got their banners of their horses all over the airports. You know, of the, you know, going to the farms and stuff like that. You mentioned Accelerate. I'm sure Flightline will be used all over. They got a mural of them here at Santa Anita.
Yeah, they got a great mural of Flightline.
One thing I want to mention with John, up until about 15 years ago, I'm going to say you had a lot. You had some trouble winning out of state. You were not known as a good shipper. And then you had that horse that won the sprint at Dubai, and I can't remember his name.
Our new recruit.
There you go. And I think, I remember when that happened, I think it was a nice price, like 9-1 or something.
Yeah, it could have been.
A nice score. But all of a sudden, you start winning out of state, and I don't know what it was. You know, not like you were constantly shipping, and then all of a sudden, boom. You know, and that's what turned the tide, I think, that kind of took the monkey off your back a little bit about sending horses out and winning the big races around town.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I like to think that if you're in the big races, you know, wherever you're running, you're doing a lot to get there. A lot of years in Breeders' Cups, you know, I'd run third to Miesk or third to Goldakova.
Yeah.
Oh, you didn't win, you know, with some horse that wasn't Goldakova. But we've, you know, so that stuff kind of seems to work itself out.
Flagstaff helped with that, too.
Two good wins in Kentucky that year.
Churchill,
he won the
and
Commonwealth. And then one on the Derby card, so
the Churchill Downs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that picks. You know, when you start winning races all over the place, I mean, I know that picks. You know, as a handicapper, like, and as a fan of you all the time, like, God, yes. And so you're live now and all over, and then of course what you've done.
And I think, you know, in recent years we've been a little more selective than when we, you know, I mean, we're California based, so we don't ship all the time, you know. So, but when we go, we like to think we have a good chance.
And you usually do.
You know, we're talking about Accelerate and of course, Flightline. And the demand for Flightline seasons was something nobody's ever seen before. That crazed sale on Night of Stars to fetch what it did kind of created a new bar. Then apparently there's been additional private purchases of Flightline seasons. Mentioned Accelerate, the horse that I've got to ask as well, because you got him at the tail end of his career and you did well with him, is Gift Box. And of course, a son of Twirling Candy. And you know, John, at some point, the Mount Rushmore of trainers that create stallions, they may have to start chipping away at the marble for that.
And you know, to kind of play on that, the hot horse down in Ocala this year, going to the 2-year-old training sales, is Catalina Cruiser.
I'm hearing
from the big pinhookers consigners down there. They're all loving their Catalina Cruisers. So I've fortunate to have trained some really good horses, and I think they're going to do very well as stallions. I mean, Twirling Candy, I mean, he's rock solid, you know, and he's got great crops the next 2-3 years.
Speaking of Twirling Candy, it made me think, because I haven't heard, did Rombauer find a home to stand?
I don't know.
Right, because he's a Twirling Candy.
He's Twirling Candy. They must have, but I haven't read it.
Well, I'm glad that I thought of it. And Twirling Candy, the whole Candy Ride line, in fact, yesterday with Sid Fernando, the Candy Ride line came up, and the cross involving the AP Indy line females and Bernardini mares and everything on that side, we talk about that so often with Sid about, you know, multiple generation, you know, the trickle down, it worked the same cross, and it's out there for you. Out of curiosity, how many seasons do you maintain as the trainer of these stallions, of stallions?
It varies. I have, you know, varies on horse to horse. Every deal is a little different, but.
Are you breeding some?
No, yep. I'm not breeding
at all.
No, we're selling my breedings right now, but I might again. You know,
have you in the past?
I got a 2-year-old filly this year by Accelerate. That it's a long story. I had a client die, and he left me the mare, and I bred her a couple years. And
oh, there you go.
This year, so
well, that's fun,
but not a lot of breeding.
Because that's, you know, that's a thing that right now. In fact, Chad Brown has got the one horse that he bred. That might end up as a Derby horse. Not for him though. It's kind of funny. It's a side of the game on the breeding side that doesn't really get as much coverage as it should. But this is amazing, John. Thinking about all these stallions that particularly in recent years that you've handled. That's you know, a whole nother layer. And then the mares that have gone. You know, you had. You had a period too of great success with fillies and mares.
Oh yeah, well, I mean it doesn't surprise me to see Japan doing so well on the international stage.
Given the ones they bought,
I can't think of all the mares that I've trained that ended up over there, because you know they buy those, they bought for years after years. They buy these Group One mares and they take them to Japan. At my last, Oli's Candy went right off to Japan.
Ayatapa.
Huh?
Ayatapa?
Well, I think, I don't know if she went to Japan, but I know Zazu did.
Stellar Wind.
Stellar Wind went to Europe, actually, for Coolmore. But, I mean, we've had a lot of great mares, and that's been a great market for us also.
Well, the Japanese topic came up yesterday as well. John, obviously, so much success, and they don't make you a Hall of Fame finalist by accident. I think that's the lesson that's in here.
Well, I'm really excited, you know, because when your body of work is acknowledged, I mean, that's what you've been doing your whole life.
Right.
So how could you not be grateful for that? So I'm very grateful.
Kirsten Bach, before we go, what's next?
Beholder Mile.
Okay.
Worked this weekend. She won the last Philly Mare Stake, doing really well. Kind of a filly I have high hopes for this year. She's just a young 4-year-old and just maturing. So I'm excited to see her. That's March 11th. So she'll get to work this weekend and run next weekend.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad I asked. I was curious what we were going to. What did she win? She won. What did she win? What stake? Was that opening day?
No, it was when I was in London.
in January?
Santa Maria? Whatever it was.
Okay, there you go. Santa Margarita?
No, that's a long one.
Santa.
I don't know what they did with that.
Too many. No, you're good. You're good. John Sadler, everybody. And, of course, you can follow Sadler Racing. You can follow John W. Sadler. You can follow Aronis.
Follow me on Twitter.
Exactly.
Well, I'll put up a picture of the mountains.
There,
I'm going to take 400 likes.
I'm going to take a picture of you guys right now anyway. So that's perfect. John, thanks so much.
Okay, and thanks for having me.
Always
and,
a pleasure.
And we're excited to see good weather here today.
Exactly.
I know. Had to break out the sunglasses early today. For a change.
No, it's...
Here's the signs all over. I show that I send them. There. That's at Saratoga.
I love it.
There's another one, Santalina Cruiser at Saratoga. They're all over.
Well, that's Lane's End.
I know.
Right? It's all
great advertising.
It's all Lane's End. Let me stand up with, of course, John. Yeah, John's a tall tree. John's a redwood here when it comes to... let me put the portraiture. All right. And got a great... There we go. Look at Hammer. Hammer's always got that... You're in business. John, thank you. Unbelievable.
I'm here.
Rick, how long is Rick's stint as consultant? John's asking. No, he's here. He's here for the duration. I mentioned handicapping. We went through this card, and there's some interesting spots on Saturday here. I'll do the rest. Gulfstream. I looked at the highlights, but I got to take a second while we got a minute here, and actually now Rick and John are engaged talking. But for those that have not yet gotten a chance to look at New York. On Saturday, the Gotham indeed drew 15 horses. So an AE, feel bad for Radio Red, excluded at least for now. You know, when you have 14 horses, there is a chance that you get in. But Danny Gargan for the Reeves, with the recent maiden winner, the New York bred, a big beast colt, actually. Radio Red, right now on the outside looking in, but a field at least of 14 Hammer, and Hammer's back. Nice to get that kind of visit in from John.
Oh, it was great. Literally, I was looking, when I walked in the gate, I know he's out here running around. I look up, and he's sitting at the table already.
I didn't waste any time.
And he, you know what, he always says yes. Doesn't matter what's going on in his training world. He's always easy to talk to and tries to puts on a very positive slant to things.
Well, he always, it's funny, when I call him for recaps after stakes, he's one of the people, not everybody is good for the early morning hours. Some like him, you know, mid-morning or late morning, but I always know that John will come on for early morning, but at the same time, I always can expect that there'll be a point, whether, you know, where we go 10 minutes or 15, he'll say, I got a couple of horses going out now. And he pulls himself up and has to, you know.
You saw him here looking over his shoulder.
Yeah, he was waiting for the horses to come off because they were just finishing the grooming. Back to this Gotham for a second and field of 14. And I suppose it's hard to say who it's led by. As it happens, Yakteen sends in an SF and partners runner Carmel Road, but you know, Carmel Road just one of several. That Lugan Knight that Michael W. McCarthy talked about, Slip Mahoney, I suppose those three are among the top. There's also the other Baffert Barn transfer that Brittany Russell got from SF Bloodstock and company, SF Racing, I should say, the Curlin colt, Fort Warren, who was a good-looking maiden winner, and then tried the San Vicente and couldn't keep up with the stablemates. Paulo Lobo sends one in for Larry Best, Transect, a gun runner. And then on the outside, I want to mention Cal Lynch and Recruiter. This is a horse that nobody has talked much about, but is 4-for-4 with the two wins in the Mid-Atlantic in the James Lewis and in the Parks Juvenile, which, of course, was not a juvenile. It was already, it had been postponed until after the first of the year. So watch Recruiter in here, and Angel Cruz comes to New York to ride, eyeing Clover as well for 10 strike and partners of Brad Cox. It's a good group, and it's mostly sprinters. There are, I guess there's a couple of horses that are, you know, coming back to a one-turn mile. Carmel Road actually does, and so does, on the outside, the Ben Colebrook Invader, Raise Kane, the Violence Colt, coming out of the Leonidas at Turfway. So 14, the Busher has got those six that we had alluded to, and nice group as well for the Tom Fool. So New York, California, and Florida, the 3A winter tracks in particular, along with Oaklawn and Fairgrounds, and hell, these days, Turfway as well. Turfway's got the scoring races too this week, the Cincinnati Trophy and the John Battaglia, which both drew well.
Right, so you're going to see over 40 three-year-olds headed, possibly looking to head to Kentucky, and we'll be able to see what happens on Sunday after him. But I was looking at this Iron Clover. I remember talking to Marshall about this horse. I think he run in here. If he runs well, he wants to run in the Arkansas Derby with him, and as a
makes
kind of
sense.
A home track with his group, 10 Strike. A lot of Arkansans in there. But this horse, I remember watching this race. This horse looks good, and anytime Brad is there, and he's great at the stretch out, the one-turn mile, so... it's great to see a lot of three-year-olds coming out of the closet, so to speak, and hitting the racetrack.
And
it is cold here. This is the coldest morning.
It was 35 when I pulled in.
Okay.
Right now, it's I'm okay, but personally, I not that people need to worry. but it is cold. I mean, it's crisp.
I scoffed at your idea the other day about bringing one of those heat lamps over here, and now I'm eyeing them. I'm actually thinking about how much they weigh if I could actually carry one over here. But
well, you actually were right about the way they're posted. There are tubes that have them secured at least the first couple of layers.
Now I'm thinking about how we could move the table under where the heat lamp.
we'll
be fine. The sun's out, and we haven't had this brilliant sun this early all week.
Well, and you opt for the you've always sat in that spot. That's been your
deal.
Who can blame you?
Maybe that's why I always wear sunglasses.
By the way, you sent me that photo screen cap. You're driving me around day before yesterday, and I'm seeing all these canyon roads, and I'm looking at the rocks, and I say to you, are there any rock slides? Sometimes in certain spots. And
yesterday,
Malibu Canyon Road
closed. Rock slide. the rain, you know, softened them up. But I did say when we were on that canyon that it could happen here because you could see the recent cleanups, and you know, it doesn't happen that often. But in the rainy season, when it loosens up the soil a little bit, some of those high standing boulders could have a tendency to come down on the road, which it did, and close both lanes. So we picked the right day and. We'll live to talk about it. I thought that was a
that would have been a little freaky had there been a and it's not like I don't frequent Tina and I when we drive you know up to Lake Placid or up through Vermont and New Hampshire, you know, there's plenty of those kinds of roads that are cut into, you know, into the mountain, but they're the rocks aren't right there. Although every so often you do drive along, even on the Mass Pike, there's that section west of Springfield where occasionally you'll see a big boulder that is
made its way.
That is very close to the highway.
There's too many rock slides on the Taconic, is that I remember. It's just. What are you going to do? It happens.
They're there, and sometimes they want to come down. We hope everybody's coming down. I'll put in another push for Rosie and for the team at Clocker's Corner. At least today, there's finally, the familiar atmosphere with a good amount of people on hand. And, you know, by the way, speaking of which, when we're here for Breeders' Cup this year, that's one of the real pleasures, obviously, is the throng that fills this plaza. And you know, one thing I haven't mentioned with you since we've been here is last week's announcement that Del Mar is going to come back to Del Mar next year.
So that would make it 3 out of 4, right, here in sunny Southern California.
Yes, because it was Del Mar,
Keenland,
and then Santa Anita, Del Mar.
So obviously the weather probably has a lot to do with it. The ease of the building, I mean, it's turkey. You don't have to put it. Although they put additional seating in the box seat area and extend that down on the apron a little bit. But we don't need to build extra tents and things like that. And I was asking them about the infield this year, and they may not even put tents in the infield and just try to let the fans get in there and you know, fill that up a little bit more. But you know, you can't go wrong with the weather. Everything's set here. And you know, I've heard over the time that we've had it here, you know, many times years ago, that Europeans like it because they kind of know what they're going to get as far as surface wise. It's, you know, pretty much going to be a firm turf, so they can send those horses over that fit that, as opposed to maybe guessing what the weather might be or how the turf's going to play. And you know, knock on wood, we've always never had really a bad complaint. The horsemen like it here. The proximity to the barn area to the racetrack is right here, and we have the quarantine. The isolation facilities up in the corner up there, and like you said, Clocker's Corner. This is the place to be in the morning. Although they will bring that breakfast marquee and set that over there in the parking
lot. Right.
Which has been a big hit. But all the locals will still congregate here at Clocker's Corner, and there's just plenty of room for the fans. This is a little bit more fan friendly in the morning than a lot of other venues. Wouldn't you agree, Steve?
Oh,
as we just let anybody out here, we let them all out here in the mornings, and it's just crowded, and it gets them up close to the horse, which doesn't happen all the time.
No, and what's unique about it is the size of it, and you know, the way in which people can fan out here, and they can come up, sit in the stands if they want. There's the tables. There's the full, you know, breakfast option as well, although I'm still not happy about the croissant situation.
Supply chain.
I have a hard time believing that, actually.
Yeah.
I think you have to swing into action here and consult on the croissants.
We'll get that changed. I do like croissants too. When I do go to Porto's, that's one of the things I get: 6 chocolate chip cookies, 2 apple strudels, and 2 croissants. That's the standing get when I hit the Porto's when there's no line.
Well, you know, the obligations we have to deal with here on occasion that are just impossible to comprehend. There's another jockey passing that has come to light this morning. Alex Canciari is dead, and don't have any details, but just unbelievable. We'll try to get some. I don't know what you know. What can you say? That is just tragic. I'm just by virtue of his age, and you know, whatever the circumstances, it feels like a tragedy. Had been sidelined since the fall, I know. And let me see, last rode in October, is that right? December. last rode in October at the end of the Prairie Meadows meet, and over winner of over 1,000 races, Alex Kanchari.
Sorry to hear that. Of course, we'll have to get some more details before we can comment anything further.
Well, he rode, you know, I know you rode, I know you wore our silks at least once or twice. Chuck used them in Kentucky, and
he would ride anything.
He was more than capable journeyman, and just one graded stake, which is slightly surprising. He won the Iowa Oaks 2 years ago for Lynn Cleberat and Mr. Poindexter, and that was a very nice Iowa bred, that flat out speed that went 8 for 9 in her career, and including the Iowa Oaks. Alex Kanchari, very sad.
You know, I did see, we talked the other morning on Monday when we had Rich Migliore, and I'd mentioned that Bill Spahr had saddled his last horse. We saw the announcement in the form that that he is retiring. He didn't say he retired, he said he's quitting because he didn't like the regulations, and that that he's going to be around, which is great, because he's going to be, you know, an advisor, consultant type of guy that you know, will advise maybe some of his former owners on claiming horse. Because I can guarantee you, he has a note on every single horse that's ever run for a tag here in the last 2 years. That's how his barn operated, him and Daryl Radar. So his knowledge is not going to go away. He won't be here at the crack of dawn, but he'll be here in the afternoons advising his clients, and that was good to hear, Bill. And I'm hoping, I got to talk to them, I'm hoping we can, you know, do something here at the racetrack to honor his 50 years of training here in Southern California.
Very much. And I got a nice note. I don't know if John Lindo copy you in? John sent a nice note. He appreciated you acknowledging and singling out.
No, well, he's, you know, it's not hard to do. He's a true true good guy, and like I said, we belong to a little our own little book club that we would, if I would go down to Del Mar, I literally, again, as Gina, if we're on the thing, I've turned around to go get the bag of books that I had to bring back to drop off at his barn, and he would exchange, you know, if I would come by the barn, Daryl's got a box for you in the corner over there by the desk. Books. Big Jack Reacher guy. In fact, he named a horse Jack Reacher.
Oh, shit.
The Lee Child series that we all would get. Hey, the new one's out. And we would pass along Amy Atkinson and that group as well, passing around books. But just a great guy and a super horseman. You know what? And always had a smile on his face, pretty much. Just an upbeat guy. Some people, you know, you see him one day and you go, you try to duck. Try to walk around, take the long way around so you don't have to see him. Bill was never that guy, you know. You're always anxious to see him. It's classic. And like I said, if you didn't get here by 7 in the morning, you didn't see him in the morning. You only saw him in the afternoon. Classic old timer with the hours. That was gates open, and he came out with a horse.
Yeah, I just was touching base with Gary Young. And
he beats Gary here.
Gary, I asked Gary, you know, are you around to come over? So he says, no workers, no Gary.
Are you kidding me? There's somebody that takes advantage of these situations that doesn't have to come out in the morning.
Well, he's at the gym then. If he's not that, and I'm sure he's also getting ready for OBS March.
The Breeze show, I think, is next week.
Yeah, so I'm sure he's getting ready, and we'll be there all week, do the full week at OBS, and of course it's a 3-day extravaganza sale.
You know, I had a pencil in earlier, and then I was not going to go because of the Vegas thing. Now I might bail on the Vegas and try to make Ocala.
Interesting.
Yeah, shifting through some, looking at some other things I got to do, but... Vegas might be out, but Acala might be in. I like that. I like that. I like that sell. Everyone's there, and of course, they get to see Tommy, and I think Jimmy's going to be there too. So that's always a plus.
Well, there you go.
And that sale has just become
well, with, especially with
in the first sale of the year. That
now, yeah, home. with the old Calder sale with the Phasic Tipton, Florida, you know, on hiatus. Let's say this absolutely has become. You know, the early season focus, and, you know, it'll be a first chance to see any number of first crop stallion progeny in full flight, as it were, on the safe surface. Speaking of the NHC, I should slip this in. Things are set for the last chance, first chance, and the anticipation March 9th for those, which is what, 2 weeks from today? Or no? I'm losing track. It's next week.
Next week.
I'm when you leave home for a month, you're going to challenge your capacity to evaluate time next Thursday. Oh my God! So that means, yeah, that's right, because I'll be in New Orleans Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday for the NHC and the NHC recap. Next Thursday, a week from today, last chance, first chance. And this is always popular, whether even if it's even players that already have seats, they'll play. And if they get qualified for next year, that's fine. But it also gets you kind of in, you know, it's like that Wednesday practice round of a PGA event.
Gets you in the mode because I was looking at the format. It's just, you know,
yeah, you're pulling on that. There you go. There you go. No, you're fine.
There we go. We're back.
No, you were fine.
See, for me, that kind of format I have a chance at. Those are the kind I play online where you basically just trying to pick a winner or, you know,
the mythical win place
is good. I'm not good at the, you know, when you have to place the bets because I don't bet that way. $100 exact is $100 trifecta. So if I was going, I was going to play in that. So we'll, that's the only intriguing thing for me is to just to get in the contest. But I can see, on one hand, I was talking to a friend of mine that qualifies every year, and about this. And his theory is, I got so many brain cells to
absorb
that, yep, he doesn't want to waste them on this because I'm already in type of thing.
That's interesting.
You know, just the burnout factor. You know, just another day where your mind's going. So he'll spend that day, you know, getting in the mode, but also handicapping, get ready for the real tournament. But you know, there's all kinds. Speaking of tournaments, I wanted to mention there's one here. There's one on Saturday, the Ultimate Betting Challenge, which comprises of the races. The 12 races here and the 14 races at Gulfstream, and you can play either at Gulfstream or Santa Anita or Express Bet. It's a $3,500 buy-in, $2,500 bankroll, $1,000 entry. They're anticipating $125,000 prize pool. That's with 125 players, but winners can receive 23 BCBC seats, 24 NHC seats. Third through seventh receive PWCBC.
Pegasus.
Right, Pegasus contest. Registration cutoff is 4 o'clock on that day, and there's a $5,000 on-track bonus for someone who wins it that's either at Santa Anita or Gulfstream. And so I'm anticipating we will have a really nice on-site crowd here playing that. And so I'm not sure the internal rules, how many mandatories there are. But big tournament coming up here, the first Ultimate Betting Challenge on this Saturday.
Nate Newby is supposed to join us and might be in this next half hour. We will also, at the bottom of hour two, we will be visited upon and regaled with Francis, I'm going to say Xavier Miramati. Is Frank's middle name Xavier? Does that make sense? FX, is he FX Miramati?
You know what? Yeah, that might change. He might use those initials anyway. He wants to. Could be a special effects guy in a movie, you know, something like that. But yeah, when is he coming by?
He's coming at 7:30. He's coming in 35 minutes, and this always is a treat. A in-person visit from Frank. It's like a floor show. It's like when you go to Vegas. If we had a breakfast spread, it would be like breakfast and a show. You ever go to one of those? You ever go to a dinner theater kind of thing?
You know, I got to tell you, no.
It's big out here, right?
Look, I grew up. 4.5 hour ride to Vegas. So I mean,
good point.
We would go. It's like, hey, you got 20? I got 20. Hey, let's go to Vegas.
Unbelievable.
Right? People go, oh, the pool at the Stardust is great. Pool. I don't go to Vegas to spend time at a pool. I don't go to Vegas to go to a show. We go to Vegas to gamble. And so I saw the only thing I used to see was the inside of a casino. You know, back in the days, the only place you could go and play horse races from other sites. So, you know, we'd go there and play that, do some craps, get the $1.99 buffet, and then, you know, do it again, pretending like you're playing the slot machine so you can get free drinks, and stay as long as you could. If you had to take the bus home, you did. So
that's great.
Yeah, Vegas to me is just a place to go gamble and, you know, have fun and get out. Maybe a day and a half limit, maybe 2.5 now.
That's enough.
But yeah. That's enough, yeah.
Well,
no. Shows, dinners, restaurants, no, that never really entered
into
the fray.
It's too much for you.
Yeah.
Let me take a couple of minutes. We got the opportunity to catch up with Pat McKenna from the New York Racing Association, and for those that have been watching headlines and also some rather ridiculous missives, you're following the efforts in Albany to set up as part of the state budget a loan essentially to redevelop Belmont. Pat, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How you doing?
Excellent. And I won't take up too much time, but I do want you to give everybody an update. It's been about 3 weeks or so since we talked about where this effort stood, and there's been some just ridiculous misinformation that's been put out by irresponsible editorial boards at a Murdoch product, but give everybody the need to know information, Pat.
Sure. I mean, first and foremost, as I said at the time of the governor releasing her executive budget proposal at the end of January, we've been hyper-focused on continuing to communicate to lawmakers, to the public, to decision-makers, to the press about the importance of this project to horse racing and to the New York economy. That's what this is all about, and it is relatively, it's relatively simple. The state is proposing loaning NYRA $455 million so that we can construct a new and modernized Belmont Park, a facility that will honor the history and traditions of the Belmont we all know and love, but also provide fans with the kinds of amenities that, frankly, they have come to rightly expect out of professional sports venues here in 2023. And beyond. So the way that it works is that the governor proposes her executive budget, essentially a list of her priorities, and we're thrilled that she recognizes this as an economic development imperative for Long Island, for Nassau and Suffolk counties, for the entire region. We commissioned an economic impact study that found this would create thousands of jobs and lead to billions of dollars of economic impact in the years to come. And it's not hard, once you actually take a look at the project, to understand how they arrived at those conclusions. Again, this is a $455 million 2 to 3 year construction project. So right there, the impact on organized labor, on working families, on the economy throughout the region will be immense. So we're proud to engage, and we're eager to engage in that dialogue. What you noted is some of the mischaracterizations of the sport that you, and unfortunately fans of the sport, can easily recognize. He's long been in the bloodstream of certain certain outfits, certain media outlets. And listen, again, we're happy to engage in an honest back and forth. Rational, reasonable people can disagree about the priorities of a state government. That's fine. That's what this is all about. That's what being in the arena, that's what being in the public arena is about. And sure, it's unfortunate when you see things like Governor Hochul proposes bailing out horse racing industry. If a city or state, I'll give you an example. If a city or a state wanted to assist a Major League Baseball franchise, an NFL franchise, with building a stadium because they believed that that is in the interest of their taxpayers, that that will generate good jobs and economic impact. People can certainly disagree about that. That's fine. But I don't think you would see headlines that say Atlanta looking to bail out the National Football League. And that's akin to what you've seen over these last few days. This is a loan to the New York Racing Association to build a new Belmont Park that will be repaid using VLT revenues that are guaranteed to flow to NYRA through 2033. The question about the second half of the loan, this is a 20-year loan. Obviously, the NYRA franchise expires in 2033. Smartly, the state addressed that question head on and said in the budget proposal that this, at the conclusion of the franchise, whoever takes the reins of the franchise following 2033 will assume full responsibility for that loan. Obviously, where we sit, we believe that we have fulfilled the goals of the franchise agreement and more. We've invested in the properties at Saratoga, Belmont, and Aqueduct. We have strengthen the sport in New York. We'll leave that for another day. And whether if it's not us, you know, we hope that we have been effective stewards of thoroughbred racing in New York. Again, people can we're happy to engage in that debate at the right time. But the franchise, as in Saratoga Racecourse, Aqueduct, Racetrack, and Belmont Park, is an incredibly valuable asset for New York State. So the idea that horse racing in New York State would disappear is laughable because of the strength, if you're sitting in Albany, because of the strength of the sport, the fact that it creates and sustains jobs in literally every corner of New York State. So, you know, we're going to continue this fight through the end of the budget process, and we remain incredibly optimistic. This is the closest, you know, our vision of a new Belmont Park to support thoroughbred racing, to sustain the thousands of small businesses that rely on a thriving racing industry. You know, that's who we're fighting for here. This is not about NYRA in any way, shape, or form. This is about the sport that we all know and love. This is about the people who go to work, excuse me, every single day, take care for the animals, to take care of these facilities, and to make sure that the sport is as strong as it can be now and in the future.
Pat McKenna with us from NYRA, and saw the very positive and the very encouraging editorial piece from Newsday explaining the benefits. And of course, Newsday's got a particular interest and focus and understanding, given Belmont's spot on Long Island. What happens now? What is the timing of this process, Pat? And is there anything that horse players and stakeholders can do to whether they're in New York or outlying, and there's plenty of people that live outside New York State that compete and race their horses in New York that have an interest in this. What can we do to support the effort?
Sure, find out who your legislator is. You know, there are easy ways to, depending on where you live, you know, this is largely at this point in the hands of the legislature, the New York State Assembly and the New York State Senate. And we do have a letter writing tool that our partners at NYFA have developed that automatically populates a field that will then go to whoever the individual's elected officials are. It's a great tool. We've utilized it in the past to show the support we enjoy statewide, and we'll continue to do that. So I will, we'll provide you, and we'll publicize some of those materials in the coming days. But oftentimes in these debates, especially in this day and age, the loudest voices tend to get outsized attention. Perhaps we're at that point in the process, but we are certainly encouraged, we're energized, we're eager to continue the debate, to continue to be in this public arena, because that's how important we believe this project is for New York State, for Long Island, and obviously for the future of thoroughbred horse racing.
Exactly. And you know, obviously, as you kind of inferred, our audience, and I would think, if anybody's listened to me over the course of the last 15 years in particular, pointing out the mischaracterizations of certain agenda-driven publications, the Post, and at times the Times Union, the constant barrage of lies, and basically repeating the same big lie about bailout and other stupidity. It's just so maddening, Pat, to read those things and know that it's inaccurate and it's completely unfair, and it's not telling the accurate story, both of the past and of what lies ahead. So our listeners kind of know, but there's people that don't have a touchstone to the game that see some of these lies, outright lies, and have no way to discern what's real and what's made up. Very troubling.
Sure. And that's why we're working so hard. We went up with a new television advertisement, a 30-second spot in the last week or so, that tells the story of the people who, again, go to work every day to care for horses and do all the things that your listeners understand are required to keep this thing running. So we're up on television in New York City. We're up in Albany. Some points in between. It's a very targeted kind of advertisement, and we'll continue to be as nimble and vocal as possible here in the next month.
Pat McKenna, everybody, PC McKenna. If you should be following, of course, on Twitter and the New York Racing Association. Pat, I appreciate this, and whatever we can do, let us know.
Thanks, Steve.
Pat will be back. We should mention, Pat, there's a rally, right? Next Monday?
Yeah, a week from Monday.
A week from Monday.
In the Capitol. I'll come back on the show next week and give you and your listeners the details. If there are some folks in and around the Capitol region, in and around Saratoga, we're going to be in Albany again to demonstrate the the support we have, and that'll be a big day. We're looking forward to it.
Excellent. Pat McKenna, everybody. Thanks, Pat.
Thank you.
There it is. Let's do this. Let's take the break. We're just past the top of the hour. We're going to get a few minutes in with Vince DeGregory, the legend. I can't miss an opportunity for Vince to also regale us. I'm going to let Vince tell you how old he is, because they're going to have to cut him in half and count the rings. Hey, now. We're going to take the break, and when we come back, the one and only, Vince, it wouldn't hurt for you to get a new hat every decade or three. Greenwich. Greenwich, not even Schuylerville, right in Greenwich. He was born. It's unbelievable. Let's take the break. Hour one in the books. Thanks to John Sadler earlier and Pat McKenna just now. Vince DeGregory is going to join us, and then we'll have Frank Miramati here in a little bit. Doug O'Neill later in hour three, so we'll have three on a match when it comes to Hall of Fame finalists, because Sheriff's yesterday, Sadler today. And
what about Vinny?
Yeah, they don't have it. There is no Jock Agent Hall of Fame. Oh, that's nice. Oh, that's very cool, actually. Tell that story and more. Vince DeGregory, who is 90, blah, blah, blah. 90 on the nose? All right. 90.
August 29th, every 91.
Unbelievable. Just amazing. Back after this to Santa Anita, where it looks warmer than it is. Is that a fair assessment? Come back to Santa Anita after this.
It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania.